Chapter 13. Truth and Consonances. Outside, the light snow dusts the trees and ground. Mrs. LaRue's birdhouses look like they're made of gingerbread with sugary rooftops. The rich tones of Louis Armstrong's trumpet coil through the cottage, and Wink hops down from my lap and curls up on a cushion in the window. I wait on the edge of the sofa, unsure whether I'm about to get a lecture from Miss Mott or a recipe for banana bread. I've given up trying to predict what she'll do next. "You know," she says, "when my sister asked if I'd come to Mystwick to tutor a young composer, I told her no at first. I was in Papua New Guinea, documenting indigenous spells. It's a passion of mine, studying magic from different cultures and discovering links between them. But then she told me more about you, and I realized I couldn't go another day without meeting this Amelia Jones, whose love was so powerful, she pulled her mother's spirit right from the dead." She goes into the kitchen and puts a kettle on the stove, then gestures for me to sit in the breakfast nook. I slide onto the upholstered bench under a window that looks out to the echo trees. Janet jumps up and rests her head on my knee. I pet her fuzzy head while Miss Mott sits opposite me. "So, what happened in that attic?" she asks. "Like I said, I composed a spell to create a time window to find out who stole my mom's spells, but I lost control of the magic." Sighing, I add, "I know what you're going to say. I should never have messed with time magic in the first place." She seems to ponder that a moment, then rises to open a cabinet and take out two teacups. Their handles are shaped like treble clefs, and they have little matching saucers stamped with staff lines and music notes. As she spoons loose-leaf tea into a teapot, she says, "You didn't take anything, did you?" "Take anything?" "You didn't stick an arm through your time window, grab hold of, I don't know, a book or pen or something, pull it through to our time?" I blink. "You can do that?" "Well, you shouldn't. There are some laws even we composers dare not trespass. One of them is the law of equal consequence." She gives a little laugh. "Gracious, I sound like your Mr. Pinwhistle, don't I? So serious." "What's the law of equal consequence?" "It states that if you move something from one timeline to another, you must replace it with something of as equal consequence as possible. Swap an apple for an orange, for example. But better yet, an apple for an apple. Bonus points if they're the same color. In essence, something that will affect that timeline much the same way it would affect this one. The more ways it matches, size, color, chemical makeup, the better." She points a spoon at me. "You're sure you didn't take anything?" "Honestly, no." "Good. Because if you had, and you didn't leave behind something of equal consequence, it could leave holes in the fabric of space-time. Basically, it would cause a great deal of chaos and the unwinding of events that would unravel our own timelines and, well, basically, it'd be a catastrophe. It's happened before, once or twice. Took a massive amount of magic to set it right again. And I believe it also carries a hefty criminal sentence. But if you didn't take anything or leave anything, then there's no problem." She gives a cheery smile. "So, time magic aside, what do you think went wrong?" I fiddle with Janet's soft ears. "I don't know. It was going so well to start with. Then, I guess I lost my concentration. My mind slipped." She sets the empty teacups on the table. "What have I told you fuels a composition?" "Emotion. If there's one thing I've learned from her, it's that. And what emotion did you use to fuel your time spell?" Grade of B on my world music craft test." Even as I say it, I feel embarrassed. It sounds so small and silly in light of the kind of magic I was attempting. "Ah." She studies me closer, then nods to herself. "Let me guess. You got dizzy and nauseated, didn't you? Felt like your strength was draining out through your fingertips? I sit up straighter. Well, yeah, actually. What happened? She sighs. A composition is like a long road trip. You have to make sure there's enough fuel in the tank, or you'll never make it the whole way there. Otherwise, the spell will start feeding on you. Magic cannot come from nothing, Amelia. It requires sufficient energy. If you don't feed it properly, it will consume you. And it's emotion that the magic wants to eat? Exactly. Behind her, the kettle starts whistling. She stands up and pours tea. And the bigger and more complex your composition, the more emotional fuel it'll take. While I congratulate you on your noteworthy test score, I fear that it elicited too weak an emotion given the ambition of your spell. If you hadn't broken off your music when you did, it might have taken a lot more energy from you. Of course, setting off an explosion of uncontrolled magic isn't ideal either. You were lucky it only resulted in a temporary rearrangement of your friend's cells. You or he could have suffered much worse. That spell might have drained you entirely. I shudder. Meaning? She gives me a serious look. Meaning exactly what it sounds like, Amelia. It could have drained you to a husk, and there's no coming back from that. I look down at my flute case, queasy again for a whole different reason. My hand slips into my pocket, curling around the vial with the dandelion seed. There is great power in that small vial. Whatever memory is trapped in the seed, it must be an incredibly emotional one if it really is as powerful as Mr. Midnight promised. Miss Mott sets the teacup in front of me, and I yank my hand from my pocket. Which brings me to another matter, she says, stirring her own cup. What did you see through your time spell? The attic, I say, but in the past. And your mother's spells? I look down at my tea. They were stolen. You saw someone take them. I nod. The steam rises from the hot liquid in gray wisps like white magic. And did you recognize the thief? I look past her to the cuckoo clock hanging over the kitchen doorway. It's almost 6 o'clock, and I'm going to miss my study session with Jingfei and Victoria in the library if I don't leave soon. Amelia? I just remembered that I have a history report due tomorrow, I mumble. I should probably go write that. Amelia. Miss Mott puts her hand on the table between us. Who did you see? My chest tightens till I can't breathe. She waits, unmoving, as our tea cools and the cuckoo clock ticks along. I saw my dad, I whisper at last. He took the spells. She sits back, letting out a long breath. I look out the window, where the snow is now thicker. It's already formed a thin layer on the ground, sparkling white, covering the dead leaves and rotting logs. Miss Mott asks, How long has it been since he left? I pick up my teacup and tilt it, watching the dregs swirl. It doesn't matter. He's gone, and that's that. He's never written or called? I don't care. I set my cup down too hard, and tea spills across the table. With a yelp, Janet leaps down and scurries out of sight. Standing up, I clutch my flute case and glare at the puddle. I don't want to talk about him, okay? He's a loser. He ran away from everything important. He's gone, and that's better for everyone. Now I need to go to study hall. I take a step to the door, but Miss Mott catches my arm. Amelia, look. She points at my shirt. I look down and suck in a breath. The mood beads around my neck glow bright red. I touch them lightly, half expecting them to burn my skin. Anger, whispers Miss Mott. Remember how compositions are fueled by emotion? Well, Amelia, it seems you've found a mighty source of fuel. Of course I'm angry. I'm angry at her for asking questions she has no business asking, and angry at Darby for recommending the time spell, and angry at myself for going along with it all. What do you mean? I ask.
I mean, with strength like that.
She taps the fiery beads around my neck. You might compose a spell to stop time itself. But if you bottle up emotions that are this powerful, they eat you up from the inside. My heart thumps in my chest. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not bottling up anything.
Amelia, your feelings about your dad, that anger and pain, they need to be set free. Safely. With this.
She pats my flute case.
Composers are lucky, you know, to be able to weave their emotion into sound. Use your anger before it uses you.
Lucky. You think I'm lucky? Blinking back tears, I pull my flute away and step past her. I'm not talking about this anymore. He's not a part of me, and I won't let him be.
Amelia!
Rushing out the front door, I nearly slip on the slick snow, but I catch myself and plunge on. Miss Mott doesn't follow. By the time I leave the woods and look back, the cottage is hidden by a veil of drifting snow.